this message of Jesus Christ that supposedly is going to bring freedom. I mean, Jesus Christ says, the reason I'm here is to set the captives free, to bring freedom. And yet, the problem is when you look at the lives of many who claim to follow Jesus Christ, it doesn't seem like they're free. It doesn't seem like we're free. And so I've invited you to kind of walk through this with us and look at this maybe from a new perspective and to look at this message and to ask this question if maybe we've missed something, if maybe along the way we've misunderstood something. And just to kind of catch you up, if you haven't been able to be with us for the last couple weeks, and unfortunately, usually as we have conversations here at Hoboken Grace, the weeks kind of stand alone, but throughout this series, it really is a series that builds on the weeks that come before it. And so if you haven't been able to be with us, I do invite you to go online. All of the past conversations are online. You'll be able to listen to those inside the podcast, and I invite you to do that. You're going to get a lot more out of it if you can kind of see this in terms of the big picture. But just to catch you up quickly this morning on what we've been talking about, we've been looking at this message of Jesus Christ and how, although it seemed like this message was, or maybe the way that it's been presented to us is that this message was a message of you had better fix your life because something is going to happen. And I don't know if you guys know this, but this is kind of a really popular message right now. How many of you guys encountered this past week people on the streets telling you you had better fix your life because something is going to happen on Friday? Right? And for a long time, this message of Jesus Christ has been presented this way. Listen, you better fix your life because God's mad. And you're going to have to answer to him. And so what we've been doing is we've been walking through this and we've realized that, yes, absolutely, it's true that we have to answer to God. And absolutely, it's true that when God looks at us destroying one another and this thing that he calls sin, this attitude of selfishness and this the way that we handle ourselves when we're not loving, the truth is when God looks at that, yes, he is exceptionally angry. The same way you're exceptionally angry when you look at situations where people aren't being loving, where people aren't being just. But the message of Jesus Christ isn't that you need to fix your life. The message of Jesus Christ is that when we couldn't fix our lives, when there was no way we could be ready for him returning, Jesus Christ came and gave his life on this cross so that he could take everything that was broken about us and give us everything that was beautiful about him. And so for the last couple weeks, we've been talking through the fact that, you know what, you have been set free from sin. And for the last couple weeks, we've been talking about the fact that you are free from guilt. Not only did Jesus Christ pay for everything that was broken about you, but he's made you someone new. You've been born again. You are no longer who you used to be. You are no longer guilty. And then last week, we talked about the fact that you are free from the law. And you see that as you look at, or you see these things as you look at 1 Corinthians 1, 30, God has united you with Christ Jesus for our benefit. God has made him to be wisdom itself. God made us right with God. He made us pure and holy. He freed us from sin. You no longer owe. You no longer have to be afraid. You are new. You are holy. You are pure. And Romans 6:14, sin is no longer your master, for you no longer live under the requirements of the law. Instead, you live under the freedom of God's grace. And so last week as we walked out of here, I actually gave you a challenge. And I invited you to write down something on a card and to keep it with you throughout the week and to begin to live in this kind of freedom. To begin to trust God that you are actually free from the requirements of the law. The word that we used with this idea of the law is this word expectation. That you are free from expectation. That as you walked throughout your week, you no longer had to look at it and say, okay, What does God expect of me in order for him to be happy with me? And we talked through the fact that Jesus Christ had already given you his righteousness, and that before God, there were no longer expectations. And so my challenge to you was to take this card into your week, and the card read, because of what Jesus Christ has done for me on the cross, I am free to blank without any fear of condemnation. It will not change the way I beautifully stand before my God. And my challenge to you was to try this freedom, was to walk into these situations where you're making choices. Okay, am I going to do the thing that's loving, or am I going to do the thing that's selfish? Am I going to do the thing that's right, or am I going to do the thing that's wrong? And rather than using law and guilt to make your decision, to realize that you are free, to pull out that card, to look at that card, to realize, listen, I'm free to do whatever I want in this situation, and God is not going to punish me. How'd it go? What'd you find out? Now, I've been kind of walking through this for a couple years now, because I was actually presented this by my father, and he's the one who gave me this card. And I can tell you what I thought when he got it, when he gave it to me. And so I'm guessing it's probably what many of you thought when I asked you to carry it with you this week. I can remember sitting there, and he walked me through this, and he said, listen, I want you to carry this card with you. And I thought, whoa, you're crazy. And I remember sitting there, and it was actually, he was speaking, and he was in a service like this. And I remember writing that down, and I remember thinking, I hope this works. Because if not, people are going to make a lot of bad decisions this week. And as I have had conversations with several of you throughout the week, I realized that there are basically three groups of people who responded in different ways to this challenge last week. And for some of you, you took it and you walked through your week with it. And you began to really interact with this. And you began to see that maybe, just maybe, grace really does change us. Maybe, just maybe, you're actually free. And then there's another group that you got it and you're like, uh-uh. And maybe it's because you had questions about it. Maybe it's because you just don't buy it. But you're like, I'm not doing that. And then there's a third group of you, and I think this is probably the largest group of you. You got it and you're like, okay, cool, I'll try this. And then Monday morning you woke up and you're like, just work as usual. And when I bring it up here today, you're like, oh, son of a gun. I knew I forgot something. And you just forgot. And what I want to do today is I want to kind of talk to that middle group. And I want us to all do it together, because I think there are some questions that you have about this process. And I think in answering these questions, it's not only going to help those of you who are skeptical, or those of you who aren't buying into this, understand what we're talking about, but it's also going to help those of you who are trying it understand further how to be able to build this into your life on a consistent basis. And for those of you who forget, hopefully it'll just be another time to remind you to try it next week. All right? And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk through basically what we find in the beginning of Romans chapter 6, verse 1. It's a verse that I referenced last week, but this idea that, okay, well, wait a second. And this is what a lot of you thought as you walked out of here last week. Well, wait a second. If it doesn't matter what I do, if I can live however I want, if when I sin, grace just increases, then why in the world, as I read through the New Testament, as I read through the Bible, the scriptures that are written after Christ, why in the world are there so many things that tell me what's right and what's wrong? If it doesn't matter, if I'm no longer under the requirements of the law, then why, as I read through Ephesians and Philippians, all these books, why is it consistently telling me how to live my life. And how does this fit together? And you see Paul, he's beginning to address this question with the Romans as he's writing the book of Romans in chapter 6, verse 1. He says, well then, should we keep on sinning so that God can show us more and more of his wonderful grace? Of course not. Since we have died to sin, how can we continue to live in it? And what Paul begins to walk them through is the fact that, okay, you've been set free from sin. It doesn't matter. You've been forgiven for what happened in the past, for what happened in the future. You're forgiven, and you are free from guilt. You are holy. You stand before God without spot or blemish. You're free from expectation. But that doesn't change the fact, and Jesus Christ talks about this all the time, that there's a way to live life that leads to life, and a way to live life that leads to death. And what Paul begins to do in the book of Romans from chapter 6 on is to help them to be able to see, listen guys, just because you're free doesn't mean that there aren't consequences. Now, does it change the way you stand before God? Absolutely not, because you're forgiven. And every time you choose this path to death, Jesus Christ took your place. And so as Paul's walking through that, he says, listen, I want you to understand something. You stand here completely free to choose life or to choose death. And then he begins to lay out for them three reasons why they're going to choose life. And I want you to jot these down. Inside your program, there's a little notes card there, and you can just jot these down. And these are the three reasons why we don't sin. It doesn't have anything to do with judgment. It doesn't have anything to do with condemnation. The Bible clearly says, therefore, there is no condemnation for those who are in Jesus Christ. It doesn't have anything to do with God being pleased with you. It has to do with these three things. Number one, it's not who you are. Number one, it's no longer who you are. Paul talks about this in terms of slavery. And so he says, as you read through the rest of chapter 6, he says, listen, once you were a slave to sin, but now you've become a slave to righteousness. Now, as you're reading through the book of Romans, you're like, what is he talking about? What does that mean? And the way that it sounds to us is now we're a slave to these other expectations. The way it sounds to us is that, listen, now you have to live up to this standard of righteousness. But that's not what Paul's talking about. What Paul's talking about is your nature. He's talking about, and we've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, he's talking about the fact that at one point, who you were, actually the heart of who you are was broken. You'll hear this over and over again throughout the scriptures talking about your sin nature. And Paul says, listen, at one point you were a slave to sin. Even if you wanted to do what was right, you couldn't do it because the very heart of who you are wanted to walk away from God. The very heart of who you are wanted to say no to God. He said, but now something's changed because of what we've been talking about. You've been born again. And so now this new heart that you've been given, it wants what's right. It wants what's good. It wants what's loving. And I can tell you, and maybe some of you have experienced this as well. I'm not positive. Maybe I'm just the only one here, but I'm pretty sure, having had conversations with a lot of you, that you've experienced this as well. Sometimes, as followers of Jesus Christ, you'll find yourself in a situation and you really, like, there's something about you that just, I mean, you want to choose the wrong decision. There's something inside of you that's like, listen, I want to do this. And you know that it's wrong. You know it's the wrong direction. You know it's the wrong path. But there's something that says, okay, I'm going to live my life the wrong way, even though I know it's the wrong way. And so you begin to head down that path. Now, like I said, I don't know if you ever experienced this, but as a follower of Jesus Christ, what I've begun to realize is that when I start heading down that path, although there is something that says I want to go that way, as soon as I start taking steps down that path, there's something else inside of me that says, you're in trouble. There's something else inside of me that says, this isn't really what you want. And all of a sudden, there's this war that's waging inside of me. And I'm sure that you've, like I said, I'm not positive, but I'm sure that a lot of you have experienced this. And what Paul says is that before you step into this relationship with Jesus Christ, he says, the war that's going on inside of you, who you are, who you actually are, wants to go the wrong way. But when you step into this relationship with Jesus Christ, when you're born again, all of a sudden the war changes. And now who you are is the one who wants to go the right way. And so he says, listen, there's three different reasons why you're going to stop sinning. Number one, it's not who you are. It's not what you actually want. And there may be times that physically you feel yourself drawn that way, but the heart of who you are, that's not you. This was huge for me in this process because some of you feel like you have to overcome yourself. Some of you feel like in order to stop sinning, in order to begin living life towards life, in order to begin making these decisions, you have to become someone else. That's not what the Bible teaches you. That's not what the scriptures say. The scriptures say that when you place your faith in what Jesus Christ did on that cross, that you've been made new. And this process of stopping sinning is about becoming who you actually are. Your identity's changed. You are no longer a sinner saved by grace. You are now a saint. I love the way that one of my, someone who I've learned a ton from, his name's Louis Giglio, and he says this all the time. He says, listen, you're not a sinner saved by grace. That's no longer who you are. You are free from guilt. You are new. You are a saint who struggles with sinning. So Paul says the first thing is, it's not who you are. Number two, who chooses death? He says, now wait a second, guys. You're free to choose either one, but who in the world wants to go this way? I mean, if you're free to choose, why in the world would you choose death? Why in the world would you choose the path of destruction? And for him, it's not a matter of, okay, this way is going to make God happy with you. This way is going to make God angry with you. It's a matter of, listen, this is better. And why would you choose this when you see that this is better? Now, here's where we get caught up in this. And here's where we get tripped up in this. You see, for a lot of us, if we're honest with ourselves, we see God saying, okay, this is better. But we don't trust him. And so we choose this. We choose death. We choose the path of destruction. Because we think this is better. And what I believe is that for a lot of us, the reason we don't trust God when he says that this path of life is better, the reason that we don't trust him when he lays these things out and says, listen, even if it costs you, it's better to be honest. The reason that we don't trust him about this is because we haven't experienced his love like this. The reason that we don't trust him about the path that he's leading us down is because we still think that he's an angry, distant God. And because of that, we keep our distance. We don't actually believe he's good. because we don't believe that he set us free. And then the last one, number one, it's not who you are. Number two, who chooses death? And then number three, look what he's done. And this is the crucial passage in the book of Romans. This is the turning point in the book of Romans. We find it at the beginning of chapter 12. It says, "And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him." And so Paul says, listen, there's three reasons you're going to stop sinning. Number one, it's not who you are anymore. It's not what you want. Who you are wants what's right. He says, number two, why would you choose that? Why would you make yourself a slave to sin again when you've been set free? Why would you choose death when you're free to choose life? And then number three, look at what he's done. And this is ultimately what it's about. This is what worship is all about. And at the beginning of the year, we talked through this idea of worship and the fact that this whole journey is about you being free to worship. About you walking into tomorrow morning and realizing that you're free to live tomorrow however you want and God will still be on your side. You're free to live tomorrow however you want and God is still going to love you. So worship. Respond. I heard a conversation a couple months ago between two guys that I respect more than I could possibly say. It was between a guy named Dan Lyons and a pastor named Tim Keller. And I owe a ton to Tim Keller. Before we planted the church here, I was able to spend time with him over the course of 10 months, and he walked me through a ton of material, helping me understand the gospel better, helping me understand how to pastor better, everything. I owe a ton to him. And so I want to make sure that you don't get me wrong in this, but I heard a conversation between him and Dan Lyons, and they were talking about this question of what makes the church different. And it was interesting because they were talking about the church in the next generation, which for me is a really big deal because basically they're talking about us. They're a lot older than us. Hopefully they won't listen to this podcast and hear that, but they're a lot older than us. So they're talking about us. And they're talking about, okay, what's going to make the next generation church different? How are we going to stand out? How are we going to reach our community? And obviously for me, I mean, this has me on the edge of my seat because I've learned a ton from both of these guys. And I'm like, okay, what is it going to be? What is it going to be? Because as we look at Hoboken, we're looking at 50,000 people that we want to see come to know Jesus Christ and experience this kind of freedom and this kind of grace. And so I'm listening and they begin to talk through this and they're talking through what made the first church different, what made the last, you know, just the last couple years of church different, and what's going to make the next church different. And it was interesting because Keller said something that I thought was profound because he said, listen, you young guys think that loving your community and being generous is going to make you different, that it's going to set you apart. He said, but it's not. Because the truth is that our culture has adopted this Christian idea of loving and caring for those around you. And so it really doesn't matter whether you're a part of a church or whether you're not a part of a church, and you guys have experienced this. In Hoboken, this is a huge part of our culture. The idea that you give back is just a natural part of what we do. It's become an expectation of what it means to be a human in the United States. And so Keller says, listen, you think that this idea of being generous is going to set you apart. He said, but it's not. Because our culture has really adopted that. And so you're going to have to find something different. And I said, wow, that's really true. And so they began to talk through, well, what's going to make us different? How are we going to show the world that we know Christ, that we've experienced something different? And they began to throw out different ideas, and they began to talk about integrity. And they began to talk about the way that we view sex. And they began to talk about the way that we interact in personal relationships and reconciling relationships. And it was interesting because, and I'm not saying that they missed this. They were just having the conversation at a different level. But as I heard them say that, and as I heard them having this conversation, I thought to myself, no. That's not what's going to make us different. And the thing that hit me was, you see, for the early church, when you look at the early church in the book of Acts, it's really easy to think that their generosity was what made them different. Because you see them caring for the widows and the orphans and the poor in unbelievable ways, and you see all these people come to know Christ. And so it's really easy on a surface level to look at that and say, okay, their generosity made them different. We need to be like that. But as I heard them talking, I realized, we're missing it. Wait. What made them different wasn't their generosity. What made them different is that they believed that they were free. What made them different is that they believed that God was on their side. What made them different was that they believed in grace. What made them different is that they believed that all of this weight that they've been carrying around because of what they've done and because of the way they lived their life, that they believed it was gone. What made them different is that they lived their life without any fear of guilt. What made them different is that they no longer lived under the law. They were free. And guess what happens when that happens to you? All of a sudden, you start taking care of the poor. Why? Because it's the right thing to do? Because it's the expectation? No, because I'm free. And if I'm free, why wouldn't I? That's who I am. That's who God's made me to be. Look at what he's done for me. He took care of me when I had nothing. He came for me when I couldn't save myself. Absolutely, I'm going to go out and do the same for someone else. What made them different wasn't the way that they looked at sex. Will it change the way we look at sex? Absolutely, because God says, listen, this is a way to life, and this is a way to death. And they looked at this, and they said, listen, look at what he's done for me. I'm going to trust him. I'm going this way. And as I heard them having the conversation, I said, wait. This is just a conversation about new expectations. And that's not what this is about. This is about worship. This is about getting up every morning and realizing that I'm free. And every morning responding to the fact that I shouldn't be. Every morning responding to the fact that I should feel guilty, but I don't. Not because I'm lying to myself, but because I'm not guilty. Every morning waking up and realizing that he took care of the expectations. So why should I put them on someone else? You see, what made the early church different and what will make us different is grace. It's freedom. And here's the deal, guys. The reason most of us are making these choices, the reason most of us are choosing things along this path to death, are because we don't believe that we can trust him. We don't believe that he's good. And the reason that you're sleeping with your boyfriend is because you believe it's better, because you don't actually believe that he's loved you like this. Because when you believe that he's loved you like this, you're going to trust him with everything. And the answer to the problem isn't for you to try harder. The answer to the problem is for you to awaken to the fact that he is good. And the reason that you're having this affair isn't because of a lack of willpower. It's because you don't trust him. And we've missed the message, and we don't understand how good he is. The reason that we're gossiping, the reason that for a lot of us, we're more excited to tell people about Hoboken Grace than we are about Jesus Christ. Because we've missed it. And we don't understand how much he loves us. We don't understand how free we are. Jesus Christ came so you could be truly free, so that you could be forgiven, so that you could be new, so that you could leave the expectations behind and you could worship. But before you can worship, you have to trust him. You have to experience the fact that he's good. And if you will, he will not disappoint you. If you come home, if you decide, okay, I'm done hiding, I'm going to run into his arms, you will discover a God that you could have never imagined. And all of a sudden, you'll discover what Paul talks about when he says, this is about living a life of worship. Just waking up every day and responding to what he's done for me. Father, today, Dad, you know I can't communicate this to hearts. I want so badly for us to be able to grasp this. I want so badly for us to be able to understand it. But Father, I've sat in so many services where this has been communicated, and yet, myself included, I've walked out not having experienced your love at a heart level. And so, Father, I beg you, whatever it takes, teach us, show us, awaken us, open our eyes to what you've done and how amazing you are. And may we begin to live lives that scream your praise as we just freely worship with everything that we do, with everything that we have. In Jesus' name, amen.